Thank you all. This is Brenda speaking and the recording has started. Welcome to the RDS Who Is 2 subgroup for Who Is 1 Rec 4 Compliance. The call is on May 17th, 2018 at 1500 UTC. And attending the call today is Susan Kawaguchi, Alan Greenberg, Carlton Samuels, and from ICANN organization, we have Jean-Baptiste, Alice, Brenda, and Lisa and Steve. And I'd like to remind you the call is being recorded. Please state your name before speaking, and you may begin the call, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you. And once again, I you know, this will be quick because they're going to be knocking on the door, throwing me out of this hotel room at 11:30. Not a very flexible hotel. So if we could scroll to the first. So the first slide was, I just wanted to remind everybody about the face-to-face agreement. And as long as, if anybody had any issues with that, and though I didn't see any on the email threads, so I'm going to assume everybody agrees with that. And then if we can go to the next slide. So this is one of the first question. These are additional questions we asked that we developed during the face-to-face, and these are the answers. You all received these in the document from compliance, but I had some questions or concerns about these and wanted to get your input. They didn't seem to really answer this question about, or maybe they're not tracking, they don't know whether or not there is a registrant email address or the registrant information, the postal address and telephone numbers in the grandfather domain. So just as a reminder, in the 2009 RAA does not require that information in the WHOIS record. And although anecdotally, you know, I've never seen those fields blank, but we asked the question whether or not, you know, how often that that information is absent from the grandfather domains. And to me, they didn't really answer that question. So, you know, I don't know if this is a problem or not, and I was wanting to get your opinion on that. Anybody have any thoughts?
Yeah, it's Alan. I certainly have thoughts, and I think it's something that we need to ask again. And if we can't get an answer, then it goes into the report that we can't get an answer. Because if indeed the information is nominally optional, then we really need to know to what extent is this an issue, or is to what extent is it, I've got to believe it's an issue, otherwise the registrars would not have made a fuss about it. If everyone's compliant, then it would be fine to say we don't have to grandfather it.
Very true.
That implies to me there is an issue, but I think we need definitive information.
Okay, so let me, I'll continue to pursue that. The other avenue I was going down with this is just asking the negotiating team on the 2013 RAA, why these were allowed, and I haven't received that answer. And I'm going to use GDPR as the excuse again. I'm going to continue to pursue that line of investigation, also trying to get some insight on when they investigated. And Carlton, please go ahead.
Yes. Couple of things. When we asked that question of the compliance team, and if you look at the data, the raw data, what they promised to do is to do a sort on null fields. Typically, the reporting does not sort null field. It says you're looking for syntax and operability, and if the field is not there, it is assumed that this the syntax is wrong and it's reported as a syntactic problem. But we and this is a couple of years going now, we agreed that, at least we thought it was agreed, that they would make a separate reporting on null fields. But Maggie would probably remember this from the discussion a couple of years ago. And I think that's what needs to be done. And I certainly would agree that if we can't tell a null field, in this instance, we probably should flag it as of concern.
Okay, so you're saying if they did a sort on null feed on in the who is accuracy reporting, the ARS sort of test domains, you know, the group of domains that they're looking at, if they could go back and do a sort for null, that they might be able to find out there if information is missing in those fields?
Yes.
Okay. So, I will ask that. And Margie's who I asked, but we just haven't had time to, about the negotiations. We never have enough time to cover that topic because we're usually talking about GDPR. So, Lisa, please go ahead.
Thanks. So Susan, I think you actually are looking for both a combination of null fields and then the subset of that that are grandfathered domain names.
Oh, you're right.
So there may be, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Excuse me, this is Brenda. I just wanted to let you know Thomas has joined the call.
Welcome, Thomas. So we're Thomas, just for your information, we're just talking about the fact that we didn't seem to get an answer from compliance on the grandfathered domains and how many are of those grandfathered domains are actually missing the registrant postal address, telephone number, and email address, because that's not required by the 2009 RAA. So I'll pursue that. I'll draft a few other more in detailed questions and then send that out to the subgroup for your edit. If we can move on to the next slide, unless somebody has a comment on this. And John Batiste, can you move? Okay, so on this one.
Actually, yes. Susan?
Uh-huh.
This is Lisa. Rereading what compliance answered, the second part of their answer was that contractual compliance's role on this was limited to looking at guidance related to RAA obligations. And I wonder if what they're telling you is that you need to ask GDD if there's any information that can be extracted from the data that was collected that compliance isn't already looking at.
Okay. That's a good point. Okay, so I will, when we ask, and I know this is going to be a little late for our draft report, but
I'm sorry, but that is a little bit of a sleight of hand. It is not compliance responsibility just to provide guidance. It's also to ensure compliance with the requirements. So if they think guidance is just about guidance with syntax and operability, no. If it's missing, they are obliged in operationally to say to the registrar, these things are missing and you should put them in. Because that's when the second part of the requirement comes into play. What happened with the ARS on the ARS system when you look to see if they have abided by the rules of the regulation.
Okay, I'm making notes on that.
Carlton, the wording says their participation in the ARS program is limited to, not in general.
Right, and I'm saying yes, but regardless of the ARS program. The ARS program is an audit, it is for auditability, in my view, is an audit tool. But if compliance finds by other means that the requirements of the RAA are not abided to, then it is their duty to seek compliance from registrars.
Certainly.
All right. I'll make a note of that too. So in the interest of time, let's go on to the next one. So I was concerned about this, and I think I may, if we go down a little to the next slide, maybe I have some text in. So actually at this point, the third bullet, and sorry for all the errors I copied and pasted, ICANN contractual compliance really recently began reporting on closure reasons. And that actually, that report, that metric is pretty interesting. What I did find in this was that there's a high percentage of inaccuracy complaints that are reported on domains that, and they weren't clear on this, so it's something I think we should ask, that the domain names were either already suspended or were suspended for inaccuracy. My concern with this, and I've been known to file many inaccuracy complaints on domain registrations that are suspended, is because usually that information, in my case at least when I was working at Facebook, was Facebook information, so therefore it was inaccurate for that registrant. And the Whois record still exists. And so there needs to be another way of, to me, an inaccurate Whois record should not be allowed to exist out there for as long as the domain name has been renewed, even in a suspended state, because that information is bad information usually. And the registrant, even if the domain name is suspended, and usually it's suspended for bad behavior or something, or lack of response, that information should be changed to something else, in my opinion. So I was wondering if I could get your input on that. I mean, am I off base? Do you think I'm going down a hole that we shouldn't go down? Or what are your viewpoints?
This is Carlton again. Susan, no, you're not going down a hole. And it's surprising how these things recur. The problem with the reporting is that they give you a code, and the code does not have enough granularity. And so what they have to do is look back at the coding so that we have more granularity in what the code means. And this is something that I think Maggie and them actually acknowledge more than 2-3 years ago, that this is something that they should be doing to in the next. And we were told at the time when we made the point that this was something that was going to be fixed in the updated algorithm for the reporting system. So it's to me, this is feedback that they would have known about, and they acknowledge it has to do with the granularity in the coding system that they promised to have fixed with an updated algorithm. It has just not arrived yet. So you're quite right.
Yeah, it's Alan. I'm not quite sure I follow you, Carlton. My recollection is that the real problem was that they allowed domains to be suspended or put on hold. I don't remember the exact term. And we then found out that there were times when the registrar simply unlocked it and left the information the same. Mm-hmm. And they claim that they are now checking against those to make sure that they don't get unlocked unless the information is changed.
Correct.
So, Susan, are you worried that the domain may be unlocked and therefore would have active bad information again?
Or are you looking at it just from a philosophical point of view that even if it's locked, it shouldn't be allowed to have bad information?
Both. So oftentimes that bad information is not that registrant's information. It's basically identity theft. And so then you have a suspended domain name which is a negative perception, you know, oh, a domain name has been suspended, owned by a registrant, you know, indicated in the registrant field that is not accurate. And so it's sort of, in a company's, you know, view that it's like, oh, somebody can look at that and go, you know, most people would understand, but a lot wouldn't, that no, Facebook didn't really do this bad behavior and have a suspended domain. It was fake information, right? Inaccurate information. But so to me, it should be changed. And some registrars do this. They'll update it to their own registration information, but indicate that it was a suspended domain or something right. in the registrant field. And I think that's a good practice. So maybe we need to recommend a good practice in suspended domains.
Yeah, I mean, that was really going to be my question. What do we recommend? Now, I could easily say that we recommend that a policy be adopted because it either has to be negotiated with the registrars and agreed to or adopted as a PDP, as a, mm-hmm. a policy that you can only suspend a domain for bad Whois information for 1 month, you know, some arbitrary time, and then it must be deleted or the information must be changed to the registrar's information or something.
Mm-hmm.
We can't recommend a policy. We can recommend that I can go through whatever process necessary to make sure it is a policy or a best practice if we're willing to accept that. I'm not particularly willing to accept that. Bad actors don't have to accept best practices. You know, I think this is one of these things that if we can't negotiate it, the GNSO, I think, is going to have to figure out how to do really short PDPs, you know, where everyone agrees it's a good thing, let's just do it. And I think we should push that direction in our report. So if we find something that needs policy change, then I don't think we should shy away from recommending it.
I totally agree with you, Alan. I totally agree with you on that. And if you have the data to back that up, is where Suzanne things comes along. The domain is suspended, but it's an accurate Whois, then they need to flag that separately. If the domain is made live again without the updated Whois and to make it accurate, then there's another way to flag that. And you do that by making the codes more granular. So the two things come hand in hand. You need the data to represent the report and the recommendation that you're making, which I fully support.
Okay, we're down to less than 4 minutes, and Susan has to vacate the room.
well,
now,
they haven't
if she's on her phone, she can keep on talking from the hallway, I guess. But exactly. Susan, what do you want to do going forward right now?
Okay, so let's keep going until somebody, you know, at least another 5-10 minutes. Lisa, you had a point you wanted to make?
I did, and I typed it in chat. My takeaway from what the three of you have said is that you might be looking at recommending either a policy or best practice be developed in order to flag when in Whois itself. When a domain name has been suspended for inaccurate data.
Yeah, that's true too. Because that actually would, if that was flagged, then people could read it and go, oh, this is inaccurate data, it was suspended. I still think the data needs to go away.
Yeah, I think we're talking both. I think this the code has to be more specific and they can't let it sit there forever.
Right. Deciding exactly how that would be addressed as Alan pointed out, might be policy development. So it's not to the review team to develop policy, but to flag the problem, right?
Yeah, remember, the board has the ability to initiate a PDP.
Yep, but I also like the idea that we discuss short PDPs for specific issues that we have identified. So, and let's really quick go to the next. I can't remember. I had those two points in my mind, and I don't remember. I thought it was good that they gave us a list of information that would be helpful. And we sort of discussed this, number four, in Brussels, but to me, their answer about doing any analysis of who is in accuracy trends is, you know, they answered it, but I don't think they do much. That was my takeaway on their response. So I think that, and that's sort of something we agreed upon, I think, in Brussels, was that we should make a recommendation that, especially in light of GDPR and not having as much public information displayed then, or information displayed to the public, excuse me, that we should make a recommendation that they're proactive in monitoring and seeing trends and just looking, identifying patterns. What was your thoughts on that?
I have no argument with that.
Okay.
None at all.
I think they need to be doing pattern recognition on virtually everything that they have that are compliance issues.
I agree totally, but I will also say a lot of the data that they need to do pattern recognition is available to them. What they have to do is to restructure algorithms to show you the pattern. For example, if you look at the requirement for the inaccuracy, the fields that are listed there, the ones that would cause more problem is the reportage fields. If you look at who's doing the reporting, and you probably have more, a little more added to it. For example, if a spam house would do the reporting, right now it is very difficult to tell if a spam house who did the reporting. But if you extend the database with just more granularity in some of the fields for the reporting, you would even have better capability to do the pattern matching that I think can be done.
Okay, I took notes on that. Also, I was surprised on the bulk who is, because I sort of had this vague idea of about bulk who is reports were permitted. But according to their response, only 10 people are vetted and approved for using the bulk who is, and only 3 reported last year. So I think that needs to be, Christmas might become mute with the GDPR, because how can you report inaccurate who is if you can't see it? But I think we should, I'm going to look into that a little bit more in the process to be vetted, who gets to do this. And I think they should sort of publicize this more. And I did get a knock on the door I'm ignoring now. But one other really quick thing was on the DAR reporting and information. I copied the CCT review recommendation, and I was hoping, thank you so much, John Bachis, that maybe you, Carlton, could help draft, if we want to sort of pile on this one, or draft something different for a recommendation for our work based on this. and specify that it's, you know, only related to the who is. But I thought maybe because you were more familiar with the DAR information that you could give me some ideas on what to be included in that recommendation.
Yes, Susan, I will look and revert. At the minute, we spent a lot of time, Drew, myself, and Laureen, in looking at this DAR initiative. I can't think of anything off the moment, but I will have to look at ours in context and see if there's anything that we might add. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that help. Okay, I will put notes together from this call and send out. I'm also working on updating our draft report. I'll send that out as soon as I have it. But thank you so much for your input. And unfortunately, I do have to go to get thrown out here. So thanks, all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Jean-Baptiste and Alice, can you stay on the call for a moment after we stop the recording?
Do you want me to stay, Alan?
You can stay or not. It's not secret. I just need to talk to them.
Okay.